The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So welcome to Happy Hour. Thank you, Neil, for putting that in the chat box. I'm going to continue on this series on the inner critic. But this inner critic, right, this inner, you know, I don't know what to call it, you know, it feels like a sub-personality or a voice or just this aspect of that criticizes us and always putting us down and you should have done better, you should do this, you shouldn't do that. One of the characteristics, right, is kind of this harsh tone and this word should. These are some of the characteristics. And today I'd like to talk about something that's maybe obvious and implicit, but to make it a little bit more explicit, is that when we're working with the inner critic, we're not saying that we can never recognize that we made a mistake or we didn't do things in the best way or harm has been caused or, you know, something like this. We're not saying that that hasn't happened, but what we're doing is learning to make a distinction between what we might call discernment, which is this recognizing like, oh, yeah, that might could have been a little bit better, versus like this negative judgment, which is more like this unhealthy habit that we have of responding to everything. So discernment maybe is a tool, we might think of it that way, that can support us in going forward, whereas this inner critic is this negative judge that's just like a habit and the way that we often respond to almost everything or maybe even anything. So by not giving our inner critic legitimacy or authority, it doesn't mean that we're throwing out our capacity to evaluate, right? In fact, I would say that we're enhancing our capacity to evaluate. So one way to notice this, and probably you all will recognize this, and I've mentioned this in some ways before, the inner critic is kind of like reactive and closed. It's like it's kind of like it's stuck in this one place or on this one situation. It doesn't have a sense of movement or possibility. So instead, it just adds this value-laden judgment, I guess, to our experience. For example, something like, why did you even bother to try something new? You messed that up. Or, because this happened, this means you're a lazy, good-for-nothing human. I'm saying things that are exaggerated, right? And maybe it doesn't show up so exaggerating. But there's versions of this that show up for us. This just goes to show you can't do anything. You know, there's like versions this that sometimes can be in the back of the mind or in the front of the mind, but that kind of are just stuck and maybe just get reiterated again and again. And we can contrast that with some discernment that's more forward thinking or opening doors. So it recognizes that things didn't turn out the way that you planned, or maybe it could have been better, or maybe you made a mistake, or you forgot something, or something like this, right? We are human. This is what happens. Of course it does. But discernment, like, considers alternative approaches, or considers reasons why it didn't turn out. So rather just this value laden, like, oh, you schmuck, you should have done that better or different. It's like, okay, that didn't work so well. Next time I better make sure that I sleep well and have eaten well before I try to have a difficult conversation. Or next time I should maybe get a little bit more information before I start yelling, or I don't know what it might be. But so this discernment is a little bit forward thinking and like, what can I learn from this? How can I do something a little bit different so it doesn't happen again? So it doesn't have this tone of harshness Instead, it has maybe a little bit more of curiosity or scientific or like, okay, that didn't work. Let's see if we can figure this out. Well, I had this assumption and now I realize, oh, that assumption wasn't accurate. Okay. Note to self, don't make this assumption. You know, that's the kind of thing that's maybe like a discernment. So whereas inner critic just kind of gets us bogged down in this judgment, and often we're like extrapolating, because this thing happened, it means something about me as a person, and it's not flattering, whatever it is. But discernment instead allows us to see like, oh yeah, here's some issues I probably should look at. Yeah, I might need to manage that situation, or here's some tasks that need to be done, or something like that. And then here's the interesting thing, of course, probably all of us have this experience. We flip back and forth between discernment and this kind of inner critic judgment. And so can we notice both? Can we notice when there's more of an open quality and a sense of potential and moving forward and learning, as opposed to kind of like, it's really, you know, I'm like slumped over because it's oppressive. It's so heavy on our shoulders, this inner critic. So to notice that we probably are doing both, and can we not prioritize the inner critic? Just maybe take some of the authority out from it. Like, yep, okay, there's the inner critic. But I'm also noticing that there's some way forward here, or I can do this, or I can do that, or something like that. So just this recognition that, A, when we're working with the inner critic, we're not saying that we're going to pretend like everything's hunky-dory all the time. Instead, we're going to maybe develop the skill of telling the difference between the inner critic, which is judgment and is stuck and mired in kind of what it means about me as a person. Whereas I'm using this word discernment, is more about this acknowledgement. Okay, maybe that didn't go the best that it could have, and here's why, or here's some things that I can do, or maybe, you know, some ideas or something like that. So then I just blithely say, well, yeah, don't prioritize the inner critic. Easy peasy, right? No, turns out this can be a habit. So it's so real. I mean, this is well established that this is like a familiar way of dealing with difficulties or setbacks or mistakes or anything like this. So what can we do to make it so that we don't always prioritize and believe and give authority to this inner critic? And some of what we can do is this loving kindness practice, this compassion practice. Allow the mind, the heart to experience and settle in to what is it like to treat oneself with care and respect, with some spaciousness and ease in the face of difficulties. So just letting the mind, the heart, the being, we might say, to just have that experience, to know that it's possible. And then the more we have that experience in these admittedly contrived ways, but the more we have that, it's easier it is to access it. Neural pathways, right? We're building neural pathways here. So with that as an introduction, we'll do a little bit of mindfulness and a little bit of loving kindness. I find, so the mindfulness is to kind of just finish arriving here, just be present. Loving kindness is to kind of soften and open the heart and mind. I think unknowingly we often bring kind of like maybe some of the momentum of what's happened during the day, which necessarily doesn't have a soft and open heart and mind. Sometimes we're just so busy with problem solving or something or maybe we're mired in the inner critic, that we need a little time to just soften and open and warm up, so to speak. So we'll do a little bit of mindfulness, a little bit of loving kindness, and then a little bit of compassion. Okay, so we'll start with some mindfulness practice. And just resting our awareness on the experiences right now. Like what are the physical experiences, for example, right now for you? I often point out these obvious ones of the pressure of the chair or cushion against the body. But there might be some other sensations that are compelling for you. Maybe feeling what the hands are touching. Maybe noticing if there's some tension or tightness in the body. And what happens when you bring your attention to those areas? It might be the tension lessens, might not be too, no promises. We can bring the attention to the sensations of breathing, the experience of stretching that happens as the body breathes, and then the release of the stretch. And when the mind wanders, just very simply, gently begin again. Just hanging out with the breath here. Just for a few more moments, allowing a little bit of settling, some collecting. And then to begin our loving kindness practice, we're going to start where it's uncomplicated and easy. So bringing to mind a lovable being, whether that's imaginary kittens, puppies, babies, maybe a furry family member, maybe a human family member, or maybe somebody that inspires you, that you feel appreciative of, an author or leader or speaker, teacher. Choose someone for which the relationship is really uncomplicated. And connect with this lovable being. It might be a feeling of warm-heartedness, and maybe not. It's perfectly fine if there isn't. But if there is, connecting to that experience of warm-heartedness, openness, spaciousness, care, and then to support our cultivating loving kindness, or really staying in touch with our intention of loving kindness, we can say these phrases. May you be saved. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. Right now, there's nothing else to do and nowhere else to go. We're just here, practicing with loving kindness in a relaxed, easy way. And then to extend or expand this loving kindness to include ourselves. Like, why wouldn't we include ourselves? May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. Extending warm-heartedness to ourselves. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. Feeling into the body, allowing any bodily experiences that's associated with warmth or care, openness, spaciousness. Some people feel something in their chest or in their belly. If there is something, allowing it to maybe be a support or even like a fountain of care, warmth, respect, goodwill. And again, it's perfectly fine if there's not any particular bodily experiences. But if they are there, can you have them be a support? And now we're going to extend our loving kindness in a way that we're allowing it to touch some difficulties in our life. So on a scale of 1 to 10, right now we're going to practice with difficulties that are a 2 or a 3. Small ones, annoyances, not the biggest difficulties we have. And I will offer a few phrases. You can just choose a single one, or you can do all of them. Whatever feels the most supportive for you. So bringing to mind this mild difficulty. The phrase we might say is, I'm doing the best I can right now. I'm doing the best I can right now. I'm in the process of learning new ways, and this takes time. I'm in the process of learning new ways, and this takes time. May this difficulty be held with kindness and ease. May this difficulty be held with kindness and ease. I'm doing the best I can right now. I'm in the process of learning new things, and this takes time. May this difficulty be held with kindness and ease. May this difficulty be held with kindness and ease. Chances are that you've switched difficulties. I think that's a nice way to practice. When a difficulty that you brought to mind somehow doesn't feel like it has a charge to it any longer, and we move on to another one in a relaxed, easy way. I'm doing the best I can right now. I'm in the process of learning new ways, and this takes time. May this difficulty be held with kindness and ease. So in this teaching about telling the difference between the inner critic and the discernment, healthy, rational, normal discernment, the encouragement is to not give the inner critic authority or not to believe it or not to give it priority. Notice that we're not saying you must kill, get rid of, throw out the inner critic, right? There's nothing like that. We're just, okay, it's there. We're just not going to give it a lot of attention. We're going to pay attention to a little bit more rational, reasonable, something, a way of thinking. And this won't be so easy necessarily. This can be a habit of kind of berating ourselves, and it feels uncomfortable to do something new and different. This is why the kind of a meditation practice can be supportive. But I just want to emphasize that we don't have to get rid of it, right? That's more kind of like the inner critic saying, oh, you should not have this. So instead, we're just, you know, paying attention elsewhere, just letting it kind of atrophy or get lonely and go away or something like this. I don't know. So now I'd like to create an opportunity. You guys can talk about this with each other, this idea of discernment and the inner critic, and that maybe it's, we don't have to get rid of something, but we're just recognizing what is the best way to move forward, for example, instead of kind of like the stuckness that the inner critic can really lead towards. So now I'd like to, and when we're in these rooms, it's helpful to just maybe make one point and then let it go to the next person, and they make one point and then let it go to the next person, rather than, you know, telling all your deep, dark secrets and instructing, informing, and other people. Instead, it's more an opportunity to practice a little bit of kindness and care by holding the space for others. And we certainly aren't giving advice or something like this. So just make this that these breakout rooms a place of warmth and care. And if it's helpful, you can go in the order, alphabetical order. Sometimes it's helpful just to say who's going to go first. Otherwise, it will always be the extroverts who go first and the introverts who go last. So just to kind of level the playing field a little bit. Okay, here we are. Okay, welcome back. Welcome back. So, are there any comments or questions? I saw right at the end there that some of the groups, like one group ended up with nobody. So, I'm sorry. So, probably some people leave and then they're trying to make sure that doesn't happen. But my apologies if you ended up in a group by yourself or something. But so, are there any comments or questions or something you'd like to share or say coming back?
Can I say something?
Sure, Jennifer.
I'm hiding tonight, though, because I look like a zombie. But we were discussing neuroplasticity in the group, and I think whether we measure it or not, and whether we realize it or not, the effects of what we do here are so profound. I just feel it in so many small, loving ways in my life. And I'm so grateful that I found you in this group and that we have this opportunity, because it's just so profound. Even without, you know, doing the science, I know it's real. So thank you. I'm so grateful in my heart.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, right? It's not so complicated, but can be transformative. Very, very much so. Thank you. Thank you. Anybody else have a comment or question or something they'd like to add? Okay. No requirement, right? Of course. So we can end by unmuting ourselves and maybe saying goodbye all together in a really way. So bye-bye and thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Diana.
Thank you, everybody.
Good night, Ethel.
Everyone.
Good night, Robert.
Thank you, Diana.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Diana.
Good night, Jessica.
Good night. Thank you.
Thanks, Marianne.
Good night.